You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Today's episode is brought to you by The Bike Riders, a new film from Jeff Nichols starring Jodie Comer, Austin Butler, and Tom Hardy. Inspired by true events, The Bike Riders follows Benny, played by Austin Butler, the newest member of Midwestern motorcycle club The Vandals, led by the enigmatic Johnny, played by Tom Hardy. Critics are calling it electrifying, stunning, exhilarating, powerful, and the godfather of biker movies. Experience The Bike Riders on the big screen this summer. Now playing only in theaters. Visit BikeRidersMovie.com to get tickets now.
Ha, come on.
Let's go. Vamos.
Cooligans, baby.
Aquí estamos.
Easy Cooligans, buddy.
Let's go. Welcome. My name is Cristian Polanco.
I'm Alexis Guerreros.
We out here. Another exciting show in store.
Hey, real quick, can I give everyone a little advice?
People have been waiting for years for you to give them advice. Everybody, get ready for the Alexis Masterclass. Let's go.
Try not to miss any days in high school, especially history class.
All right. Yeah, you may have been seeing a couple comment sections.
No, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm just giving generic advice.
All of a sudden, Alexis
is... got nothing to do with nothing. I don't know what you're talking about.
Persona non grata.
Yeah.
But, hey.
Zero comment. If I speak, I am in trouble. I prefer not to speak.
Okay. Alexis is just here so he doesn't get fined. Uh-huh.
All right? So... yeah. I'm shutting up so I don't get fined.
So, look, that's as much as we'll address it. Uh-huh. And if you know, you know.
And if you don't worry about it.
If you don't know, then you know what? You're probably not extremely online.
Yeah.
Probably a good thing if you don't know about it, to be honest with you.
So that's it. Hopefully, that's addressed. Anyway,
yeah.
What's good, everybody? Welcome to another fun show in store. A reminder, go check out our episode earlier this week with Pablo Torre.
Okay? Oh, what a good episode.
Because it was an absolute banger. I know Pablo's a popular figure in American sports. I know that. But he has there's a certain lore about Pablo Torre.
Is there a Pablo Torre beehive?
There is, kind of.
Pablo Torre stands out there?
Yeah. There is a
Pablo T hive?
There's an account called PTFO Dictionary, I believe. And it is anytime Pablo uses a big word on a show, they highlight the fact that he used a big word.
These
and
are
they
some
give
of the busiest people on the internet.
That is jobless behavior. No offense. Wow. To those people.
Okay. And look.
Someone's on fun employment.
So you got to appreciate the fact that, you know, there, a lot of people care about.
What did he say? Like obsequious? What did he say on our show?
I mean, he used a couple, decent words with a couple syllables. Nobody pointed out anything he said on our show. But, it is a real account. PTFO Dictionary, and recently, I guess on Pablo Torre finds out, he used the word skeleton key, which is not too...
That's not... No, you dumb if you don't know what a skeleton key is.
But for some people, it might be a thing.
Join me in the dumb category, by the way.
Oeuvre. He used the word oeuvre, which means the works of a painter,
did
composer.
They not know what fillet is?
Oh, that's right. He did say... Oh, he said the word masturbatory on our show.
Yeah.
And that's what someone highlighted, which is... I mean, look, that is perfectly valid to bring up. That word comes up from time to time on our show, okay? Not the action, but the word.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Both.
Okay?
Yeah, you got to really tune into the... You got to be the gully squad, bro.
Okay, that's for the Patreon. It's also... We do it while we say it.
Uh-huh.
So...
look, some people learn by listening, some by watching.
Anyway. So shout out to Pablo. Make sure you check out
what
that
is it, like audio, visual, and then there was the one that started with the K. That meant like both?
Oh,
you
I don't know.
Both?
I'm not familiar.
I am not familiar.
Me neither.
You like sensory or I don't know.
No. It's like you're an audio learner, a visual learner, and then there's one that means both. They could have went with both, but they didn't.
Well, look, okay, I'll rely on our producer
to get that information.
I do not know. I know a lot of words. I'm pretty good with words, but I don't know this one.
Bro, I was just telling someone the other day, Christian, he knows a lot of words,
bro.
Yo,
he be knowing words like that,
bro.
Oh,
there we go. Kinesthetic learning.
Kinesthetic.
Kinesthetic.
experiments and hands-on activities. That's the best way you learn.
All right. Well, where's the Cooligan's Dictionary account, bro?
Bro.
We out here.
There's too many fake words on the show. Yeah.
But, yo, we need a glossary.
Yeah,
we
is the official Blangolin Dictionary, bro?
So who's going to create this account? Please feel free to do that.
And how dare you not invite us into AFCON?
Okay. Angola's doing all right.
Yeah, they are.
And Blangolin could be there with them.
They haven't even brought up once when you took over the country on a President's Day.
I don't know why.
And then I marched in from the other side and retook over the country.
A lot of history, you know what I mean? Anyway, exciting show today because we're going to be joined later by Tom Boger of The Athletic to talk all things Major League Soccer, especially this transfer window which has been
Tommy Scoops, by the way.
We have been bananas, okay? So he's gonna be here to make sense of everything going on.
A banana split. It's gonna be bananas with the scoops.
Okay. The whole Jesus Ferreira getting an offer from Russia and MLS being like, nah, fam.
Yeah, and he's like, I want to go to home country.
Jesus is like, I will learn Russian right now.
Yo, I'll wear a babushka. You think I won't?
Okay. Jesus Ferreira all of a sudden being like, look, the conflict with Ukraine is very complicated.
Yeah. If they weren't such aggressors.
Like, Jesus, no, no, bro.
No, chill, Jesus.
We don't need to do all
He's
that.
He's like, it's getting me upset. I'm spilling my borscht.
Anyway, so we'll talk to him about everything in regards to that. So we have a lot to go over today. We'll talk about some stuff in Europe before that, obviously. Ivan Toney, we'll talk about him in a moment.
Do we have a cha-ching
button? Leroy Sané as well, getting duffed up by a coach.
You get mushed up by a coach?
Don't talk about that. I just want to give a quick shout out to Olivan York real quick, because Olivan York just sent over some kits. Biscayne Bay, which I believe is, I don't think it's a real club.
Now, you know what Biscayne Bay is, though, right? That's the other part of Miami Beach.
Oh, okay, no, I did
South
not know
Beach,
that.
The bay part is Biscayne Bay.
Okay. Down by the bay, where the watermelons grow, back to my home.
I thought you were going to do the sitting on the dock of the bay.
No. I have a child now, and this is a song I sing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know if you know.
Are you baby sharked up right now?
No, baby shark ain't it.
It's done? It's dead? It's cooked?
It's not, because there's a, you know, that's Rafi. You know the guy Rafi?
No.
He's like from the 70s or whatever. He made all these children's songs that we still sing today. Basically, almost every children's song, this guy like either did a version of it that made it popular, or wrote an
this dude's
one.
Streams are up,
crazy. Yo, you want to make money?
He got gold front, he got diamond fronts right now.
Just off the resistance.
Big chain. He's at the nursing home. Like, get your hands off me! I got too much damn money for you to be touching me like that.
But there's a, you know, you've heard of Miss Rachel?
Nah,
you haven't. You have okay. You know, you don't have kids.
Is that the magic school bus?
No. Miss Rachel. That's
Miss Frizzle.
You're thinking of Miss Frizzle.
No, this also sounds like a rapper.
I mean, I don't know who Miss Rachel is either.
Miss Rachel is basically the. During the pandemic, she started this YouTube channel where she's like, it's like children's lessons. She's like a kindergarten teacher, but did all the lessons kind of like on YouTube. So she wears like overalls and a pink shirt and wears a bow in her hair. And like kids are just enamored with this woman.
They're locked in.
And I'm literally like 8 million views, everything.
Oh, her streams are up, dog.
So Miss Rachel, come on the podcast.
We got to get into children's content immediately.
What's my guy's name?
Rafi.
With her and Rafi in the whip.
A collab. They got a collab. Rafi's
they're just like crashing Porsches into each other.
So there's a whole, industry for this. So I'm just saying. So that's been...
We got to do children's content.
But there's another one. Issa. Miss Issa, who is... She's like Miss Rachel.
The actress?
No.
Issa Rae?
No. But she does the basically Miss Rachel, but in Spanish.
Oh.
And my son...
Raquel. Señora Raquel.
Loves this woman.
Yeah.
She has a channel called Aprende Peque. It's a little, you know, whatever. But literally, as soon as I turn it on and he sees her on screen... My 9-month-old, like the brightness in his eyes. He's just like thank you for bringing this woman into my life.
He answered with the baby version of like, all right, ma, what you doing?
Okay, he is Dominican, so he's winking. He's like, he learned how to wink already.
He keeps trying to hand a paper with two phones, with a phone number to the TV.
He has a plastic phone right over there. Why don't you call?
Damn, bro. It only rings when you wheel it forward. Help the guy out.
Anyway, we didn't expect to talk about this, all this. No. But
Now, listen, if you have children, now you know.
Exactly. So if you want them to be bilingual, go check out
I'm telling you this. I went to a hockey game. How crazy is that?
I love how you went to Devils game.
Bro, you saw the best hockey game of the entire season.
It felt like it. I was they will not stop scoring.
Devils against?
Devils versus Golden Knights. It went into extra time or whatever, overtime. Bro, you know, their overtime is crazy. Only three players on each side first to score wins.
Yeah.
Bro, it turns into like a basketball, like a half court game almost. Just three on each side. It was crazy.
I actually haven't gone to a hockey game since they changed the rules. It's been a while. I haven't been there in a couple of years. So, or either I haven't gone to a game that ended tie.
Yeah.
And so I haven't seen in overtime. Or because hockey used to end in ties.
Yeah.
Used to be like,
wasn't it 1 point same as soccer?
It's similar. It's like 2 points. Well, now it's different because you get a point for losing in overtime, 2 points for winning in overtime, and 3 points for winning in regulation.
Yeah. I remember they said that out loud.
it's a whole damn math problem.
Shouts to Newark, bro.
Yeah. That was great. Cool. That was on my team, bro. That's my team. Anyway, okay. Let's get started. Soccer.
There's soccer football. Talk. Mike, you got a question for us?
Yeah, I do. Ivan Toney, like we mentioned earlier, he's back in some hot water again. He might be cheating again. He might be gambling again, as Alexis said before.
Kid's
the show
a gambler,
started.
Bro. A gambler's going to gamble.
There's a video of him clearly wiping the referee's, what do you call it, the magic spray off of the spot where he set up the free kick, moved it over a couple of feet. You know, what do we think of this? Is he cheating again, or is he trying? If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. If you ain't rubbing, you ain't racing.
We're looking at it here very quickly. You see him move the ball. You see
he moves it over an entire ball length.
Yes. So the referee's not looking. Everybody's setting up the wall. This is obviously Brentford against Nottingham Forest. Really, my biggest complaint about all this is that he did this against Matt Turner, the U.S. men's national team goalkeeper.
Which brings up a couple questions. Okay. Why was no one looking at him?
Somebody could have communicated maybe to Matt that, hey, we got a cheater on our hands.
Hey, whoa. This guy's doing something over here.
Okay. But Ivan Toney... this isn't unheard of, right? We've seen this before. Lionel Messi just did this in the League's Cup and ended up scoring after moving the ball. You know, the referee's not looking. You know, you get a little. You know, maybe the foam, the line is just a suggestion of where the ball should be placed, and maybe I can have. It's like he took a little artistic expression
for sure,
artistic freedom of where the ball should actually be, and ends up scoring the goal, getting around the wall. So a lot of people were asking this question.
Did he move the ball closer to the goal? I know that doesn't matter, but I'm just asking.
I mean, we're looking at it.
A little bit, actually.
But it's to provide a better angle. But this is the real issue for me. I don't really care that he moved the ball. I care that he moved the foam, bro. The foam.
He's simply right extending here. The foam.
He's like, nah, this
I don't know why I'm defending him. I was totally against this.
The foam should be a little bit further. And he picks up the foam.
You know what he did now that the Photoshop does it with AI? They extend the photo? Yeah.
Yes.
Here's what the rest of the restaurant
this
looks like that you can't see.
Adobe Photoshop generative fill. He used the feature.
What's his, like, Midjourney? What's the AI?
Bing. They all got it.
No, the AI photo, Midjourney or whatever.
Midjourney is just one of the
apps. He just Midjourneyed it a little bit, bro.
And yes, and that's what it is. So we're seeing here. He moves the ball, and now that you can clearly see that the foam is not where the referee placed it, he's like, yo, let me pick up some of the foam and just put it over here.
Here's where he would have put it. Or she would have put it, had they known this is where I was going to take the shot from.
Exactly, and it's just a little misunderstanding.
I will say placing the ball down is not an exact science, right? Like, you can't get it closer, but then you generally have, like, a range of area you're allowed to put it. But this is 100% wrong. Christina Uncle was on Morning Footing, and she said that VAR couldn't check this because even though the law from IFAB states the VAR is there to check for things. One of the three parameters is something that contributes to a goal or affects whether a goal was scored.
Yeah.
because this was during the stoppage, it couldn't have been checked.
No, this
this brings up my point when it comes to VAR is, why are y'all so strict? If you know something is messed up, you should be able to use it. We should add that. Add this to the laws.
Yeah, yeah. If it's egregiously, like, you know, against the maybe the spirit of the game, maybe, but it has to be clear. Like, even in me kind of expressing that and, like, where they should get involved, they can't get involved unless we literally write down exactly why and when they can get involved. And we've all agreed, because when VAR was first instituted, we were like, oh, this is going to slow down the game and blah, blah, blah. Right. And we all said, you know, once they came out with, like, it's only going to be if, you know, a clear and obvious error, something that led to a goal, something that happened inside the box.
Right.
This is clearly outside of the box. So this is one of those things where we're still maintaining some of the classic spirit of the game, where, like, you know, either mistakes happen or you use every advantage you can to find some success. But also,
so you're okay with this?
I'm sort of joking about it. I'm literally, the thing most upsetting is that it happened to Matt Turner. That's really all.
Here's for me, what Matt Turner could have stopped the goal from going in, and none of this would have mattered.
Correct. But Matt Turner, you see in during this moment, he goes to look at the position to set up his wall based on where the ball is placed, and he takes a peek. He looks to see where the ball is. We're looking at it right here. He looks to see where the ball is, and sets up his wall, and they move. He's like, all right, move. Y'all are too far to the left.
Yeah.
Move to the right.
He's like, guys, he's going to move the ball. So you guys, give him a little space.
Okay. I mean, he can't see the net. Yeah, you're blocking. Yeah. What are you doing?
Go around. Watch. Go around and watch him.
So Matt Turner, and he points. He's like, y'all, perfect. Thank you. Thank you for taking my instruction.
My guy.
I love that we have this strong communication.
You are now in the perfect position. Nothing can go wrong from here.
And look, after the shot went off, you know, after Ivan Toney took the shot, Matt Turner, feet planted. He has no shot he doesn't even go for it. So it was a great shot. But this, I mean, he doesn't get this advantage. It's a much tougher angle. And when the ball actually does go in, it is mere inches from the post. So this is
he gained a massive advantage by doing this.
Exactly,
yes.
Exactly. So is it upsetting to me? Not necessarily, because the assistant referee should see this. We kind of had this conversation when Messi did this against, it was, I believe, FC Dallas in Leagues Cup. Mm. He moved the ball repeatedly, and every time the referee would turn his back to you know, communicate with the people setting up the wall, boom, Messi would always slightly move it a little bit. And all of a sudden, he's at the penalty spot. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He's behind the goal. You're like, how are you there?
And we're like, nobody notices. Yeah,
the foam is there, though. You're like, I guess that's allowed. I don't know.
So that's kind of the frustration. I think this has to be a moment in the refereeing culture where we're like, yo, this is happening. Let's stay on top of this. This is just, it has to be another thing that we have to be mindful of. So after the wall is set up, go back and look, is the ball where I initially placed it? Because there should be some level of authority for the ref to be like, this is where the ball has to be.
Right.
Especially if I put the foam down.
Yeah.
That's what the foam is for.
Do you guys think, though, this is as big of a deal if it's not Ivan Toney? Because I feel like this happens once every weekend, and the only reason we're talking about it is because Ivan Toney just came back from his gambling.
This is day one.
Exactly. It's like, bro, you can't wait a week, you know?
Right. It's like pulling out a knife at a bank day one out of jail. You're like, no, I was going to cut some bread. And you're like, we're all really tense, dude.
How am I supposed to butter my bagel?
Yeah. I don't know why you guys are freaking out. But no, it's day one out of gambling jail. You can't start finessing now.
And so there's a little bit of on Brentford's side. I mean, it's like they gave him the captain's armband. He scored the goal. Obviously, it's a great story.
Right.
But there's a little bit of like, yeah, we're inflating this guy's stock price
Oh, yeah.
As much as possible.
The greatest striker has got... his coach said he's the second best striker in the league.
What a redemption song.
Oh, my God.
Unbelievable. I cannot believe... what a beautiful story. Look, we're just working on the documentary about Ivan Toney right now.
Thomas Frank is like the amount of children that are inspired by him.
It is crazy. Did you see the tears? Yeah. We have to literally wipe all the stands because he's there was like, so many children.
If I wasn't his manager, I'd want him and I'd pay at least $100 million for him this summer.
That's just me, though.
That's me talking. Okay. You know, the guy who's known for good transfers and getting good deals. I'm just saying, you do you. You know?
And this is where it's a little bit more deliberate than I think a lot of people have been talking about, because it's not just Ivan Toney. This is a team effort, because we're looking at it again. You see Ivan Toney.
Right, whoever number eight is.
Whoever number eight is. Can we see who the number eight on Brentford is? Yep. Ivan Toney is like, yo, you see him, he says something to his teammate, and his teammate's like, I got it. And then what does he do? Number eight goes to the referee, and he's like, yo, he causes a little diversion.
Matthias Jensen.
The guy who does their long throws.
Okay.
That's the guy who does the long throw-ins.
So my man is, this is a team effort, bro.
Multifaceted, bro. Long throw-ins. He's, by the way, which is a set piece. This guy is just a set piece king, bro.
All right.
He's causing distractions. He's causing disruption.
Look over there.
Nobody knows, dude.
Why is he doing barrel rolls during the set piece?
Bro, he walked up to Matt Turner and did got your nose finger between the other finger, bro. Oh, man.
So this is why I don't exclusively blame Ivan Toney and call it.
You think this was from the training ground?
These are the dirty tactics at Brentford.
Bro,
right? The dark arts. So it's all part of the game. But yeah, all I'll say is they got away with it. All good. But let's get this out of the game.
All right, here's what I'll say. It's only cheating if you get caught. Am I right, fella?
Hey, let's go. All right, everybody knows. No man has ever cheated ever.
No, that's why y'all tune into the show.
Okay. Show me the proof.
Yeah, you ain't got none.
So elsewhere in Europe, we got some more, you know, not necessarily on the field controversy. Union Berlin manager Nenad Bjelica is suspended 3 games. I think the news has already come out for mushing Leroy Sané. I don't know what the official term is.
Hey, no, this is a mush.
There's probably a word for it in German that we don't have here.
Oh, yes, it's die mush.
But yeah, he got into a confrontation with Leroy Sané on the touchline. It seemed like it was pretty innocent, honestly, just over getting the ball back and getting it back in play. But what do you guys think about this? Should Bjelica be punished more, or like, are you guys okay with the 3-game suspension?
I mean, my initial thought is like, yeah, how does this dude keep a job after doing this? I don't understand a scenario where you could. There was no reason.
Tough. It's tough to mush someone. That's like the toughest thing to do.
I mean, you would understand
push, a shove, a slap, even, but a mush
is a humiliating tactic. Yeah. I mean,
we've covered this ad nauseum on the show back in the day.
You know,
some of our day ones will remember.
Not enough people use the word mush. It's like a word that is becoming extinct to some degree.
Yeah.
I'm a little worried about my childhood.
Well, the action should also become extinct.
The action is still there, but mush is the proper word. PTFL dictionary, look it up. because, yes, and so a mush is a little...
Which is an official hello in Blangola.
It is a, Patrice O'Neill had a bit about this, about it's not as aggressive as a shove. It's more of a, like, please excuse yourself from my area
by
pushing your face away.
Which is what Nenad Bjelica was doing.
Yeah, he was, you know.
But he did it to a player.
You understand. If it's player to player.
Yeah, you're like, wow.
Wow, all right, yo.
Handbags out there.
Yeah, okay. It's getting...
Coach to coach even. You're like, all right, separate him. Separate him.
You know when Tuchel and Antonio Conte did the hard handshake.
Yeah. You're like, I said, how are you?
Even that was just like, I see the aggression. I see the passion.
The competitiveness is getting the best of them.
But
all those things.
For a coach to do this to a player, I mean, the coach, have some shame. Dude, you're, what, 20, 30 years older than Leroy Sané? Have some class,
bro. But didn't Sadio Mane punch Leroy Sané?
Yeah, that did happen.
Right?
That did happen.
As soon as I saw this mush, I'm like, yo, Mane. Mane might have been right on this one. He might have took an L for no reason, bro.
Sadio Mane, yeah, I remember it was Leroy Sané like showed up with like a black eye or something.
Yeah,
something like a cut on his face or something like that. And so it's a...
I saw someone tweet that Leroy Sané just looks like he's up to light skin activities.
That happened. Look, the internet's crazy nowadays, bro. This old light skin, dark skin. I thought we were over this.
I thought we were over it, bro. But
apparently not.
Nelly just won't stop getting referenced. Okay. Drake won't stop getting referenced.
So, my first thought when if you haven't seen the play, obviously Union Berlin against Bayern Munich and two teams that desperately need wins for very different reasons.
Yeah, this was the makeup game for that blizzard postponement.
So Union Berlin are in their one position above relegation, the relegation zone, and Bayern Munich have to contend with the team that will not lose in Bayer Leverkusen.
Literally, they're 4 points. 4 points behind Bayer Leverkusen? Yeah.
That no matter what scenario, Bayer Leverkusen could be losing a game, 2-0 or something, or down a goal, and in the 98th minute of a match, they'll find a way to get the 3 points.
They just score a goal.
So, it feels like they're on Fergie time right now, to be honest with you.
It's remarkable. So Xabi Alonso and everything he's doing there is incredible. But this... So if you haven't seen the play, obviously, Leroy Sané is on the touchline, basically wanting to get the ball to throw the ball back in. Mm-hmm. And the coach, Bielica, is just the same. You see this all the time, holding the ball, I guess, seemingly trying to waste some time. And Leroy Sané swipes at the ball to get it back. And Bielica is annoyed that.
And then his Croatian activates.
Okay. And so he's annoyed that Sané wants the ball back and swiped at it.
Swipe at me, bro? All
right. I'm going to mush you then.
You know I'm like pretty close to bulking, right?
And he just pushes at Leroy Sané's face. And it's one of those things of like, how did we get here? Why are we here?
It happened very fast.
Happened so
in the grand scheme of things. And then as they're trying to get him up into the stands, he's like... trying to be like, come up here and fight me in the stands. Like, and we're like, you are a manager.
I met a world peace. Dog, take it easy.
Damn, what is this, Detroit?
Just makes no real sense. He obviously, gets the red card. I mean, we're looking at the photos here. And it's just a silly... You even didn't even, like, if you're going to get a lick, get a lick.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, right?
But you didn't even really.
Yo, pop off. Pop off.
Swing, bro.
Yeah.
If you really want to hit him.
Bro, take my man. Like, have one of them cornrows just open up.
But it's nothing. It's like, so now he's gonna be missing 3 matches. I
think this reveals, like, a positive result in the sense that we now know if you were to swing at someone, you're banned from the game. But if you open up that hand and you mush, hey, that's 3 games. That's a little vacation.
You can do it.
That's
three games.
A little vacation.
You can handle a 3 game suspension.
That's the best time at home. Go see your kids.
So just so silly. I mean, Union Berlin. I mean, obviously the why am I forgetting? Brendan. Brendan Aaronson. Is the American that is playing there? So that that's why I'm like paying attention to Union Berlin games a little bit more.
Hey, by the way, this coach, Nenad Bjelica, only played for one team. I'm gonna tell you the name of the team, and then you tell me if this sounds like someone you want to mess with. Okay? VfB Nordea Admira Wacker Molding.
Damn, dude. What law firm
is
that?
That's the name, bro.
Yo, the furniture just started floating behind me. That's crazy.
All right, Harry Potter FC.
He seemed to look like he has a short fuse.
He looks like a guy you don't want to mess with.
Yeah, he was the goon.
So the my initial thought is Union Berlin are not having a good season, right? They went from they qualified for Champions League and now they can't even find.
Now they're gonna get relegated.
They look like it's very possible. Look, yeah. Luckily,
poor Brandon Aaronson, bro.
Luckily, there are a lot of three other very bad teams in Bundesliga. So maybe it's not going to end up happening to them out of just
You just got Everton fan PTSD, bro.
Bro, that's a whole other issue.
They're like,
bro.
Union Berlin, I think they can do this. They should have never got the points at Dortmund.
So we'll see. I mean, I think, I don't know. There's something about it to me that is like I said, like just an older a coach. I think the burden and the responsibility to me is put more on him than in Leroy Sané. Again, when you watch what happened, Leroy Sané did not deserve a mush.
No.
And in my mind, even though he didn't straight up punch Leroy Sané, I don't know how you keep this guy around. It's just like, to me, it's just such a ridiculous thing to do.
Even if he's not asked to leave before the end of the season, I don't think he gets a contract.
This really feels like one of those things where like someone just blows up at you over something small. It's like, I got a lot of other stuff going on.
Yeah, dude. All right. Well, I mean, look.
Matt got some shit going on at home.
I mean, Mike is just telling out his relationship issues.
Yeah. No. We're not there. Talking.
Right. It's like, maybe if Leroy Sané would just stop telling you to take out the garbage, you know?
Okay. It'll get done. Yeah. Whether you tell me or
it's
not.
It's not even garbage. Bitch day, dude.
Okay, are we still talking about the goats?
I don't think this guy has anything to do with Bielica, bro.
So we should we have to talk to Tommy. Tommy Scoops.
Hey, Tommy Scoops
is coming up, and we got a bunch of questions also from Gully Squad as well. So patreon.com/soccercooligans if you'd like to be one of the folks to be able to ask our guests questions. So we got a couple that we'll toss his way. So here goes. Let's chat it up about Major League Soccer, this transfer window with Tommy Scoops, Tom Bogert. Let's go.
I mean, isn't it a great day when you got the ice cream man?
Mr. We should have a button to play the ice cream music.
Okay? Are we allowed?
I don't know. We're breaking any rules. I don't think it is. I think it's an adaptation of an old song.
Right. But, well, yeah, actually, that's why you're not allowed to use it anymore, because people find out what the lyrics were. And we're talking about the ice cream truck song. That's not
Mrs. Softy.
We don't just have an ice cream song. We're going to get some ice cream. But the reason we're saying that is because this next guest, I mean, this is in the know. You know what I love about this guy is that when there's someone who is like the guy you go to or the lady you go to because they've got all the inside scoops on a certain league, not only does this guy have to do that, but then he also has to answer questions about the rules and regulations of this league, which are different than everywhere else. So this guy's got a lot of work to do. Ladies and gentlemen, we love him. He's been on the show before, friend of the show, one of our favorites, Tommy Scoops, everybody. Tom Bogert, everyone.
What's going on, boys?
Welcome. It's been a minute. The last time you were here, you were in studio covering for Alexis.
Yes.
He was away doing something.
It was right when you guys moved in, more or less. I think I was asked to be on the show to help move furniture in.
That's right. Because you got a strong torso, Tom.
You are a low center of gravity.
I played soccer with you. You do not want to go shoulder to shoulder with Tom Bogert.
Oh, no.
I promise, dude. Yeah. You
also don't go drinking with Tom Bogert because he will go shoulder to shoulder with you.
Okay, my man.
You find out just how strong he is just by, standing there.
My man is built densely.
Bro. All right, so, he got a lot of heft to him.
Okay. So, Tom Bogert, obviously MLS insider. So let's start with obviously Major League Soccer and a lot of the moves and transfers. It's been an exciting off season. I think maybe every year has its own kind of shock moves.
This one I think also has them. But which one? You know, sometimes we think they're shock moves, but these guys, they know about it.
I would say the biggest shocks to me are a lot of the intra league moves. A lot of players where you think that they're gonna leave because you know they're gonna get offers from Europe, but like Miles Robinson going to FC Cincinnati.
That, I think what he said was more shocking than anything.
About what, the
that
grass?
That going there, it's a pay cut. And we're like, hey, are we starting to pay players too much?
So, Miles Robinson going to FC Cincinnati, your quick thoughts just about that move. Is it the right move for him? I know a lot of people wanted him to go to Europe, but why FC Cincinnati in particular?
Yeah, I was very happy when I saw those quotes come out on the record because I feel like I've been saying this to people when just anybody angry is like, oh, why didn't he go to Scandinavia or why didn't this player do that? And it's like just because it's Europe, like I don't think that people realize the financial power of the top 10 or 15 teams is obviously unmatched. But like the mid-table in France, or, you know, again, even an upper-level team that isn't the top three in the Netherlands, even, again, PSV, like, again, he said it himself, there wasn't an official offer on the table or anything. But people I talked to, it's not just a pay cut. It would have been, like, a 65% pay cut. And I get it, it's the easiest thing in the world to be like, bro, go test yourself. You know, it's a bigger level, you could then move on to the future. But it's like, dude, just any one of us idiots, go take a 65% pay cut. To do whatever. Like, almost none of us are doing that, right? Like, so, I understand that idea of the ambition or whatever, like, the career moves. Like, yeah, PSV probably would have been a better career move, or insert kind of another team. But, like, I just think that it's weird, it's, like, wildly selfish to be like, yeah, dude, like, take away 65% of your earnings because I'm not going to watch you at PSV and maybe I'll put you on national team depth chart. Like, it was a big surprise to me, but the money, I'm so glad that he helped start this conversation, because when I say it, it's different than obviously the player coming out and saying it himself.
Why go to Scandinavia when you go to the bank?
Yeah, it's a little nicer this time of year. I mean,
temperature controlled in that joint. Free Otis Spunkmeyer cookies.
It seems like a good sign that MLS teams can financially compete with some of the mid-table European clubs.
Unless this hinders your ability to get recognized for the men's national team.
Which I don't think it will, because Miles Robinson is one of the better center backs. But
I agree.
But that is,
if that is a,
I'm sure those are the comments in Bogert's mentions, which is like, but what about the national team? Why are we accepting mediocrity from our players?
They're probably calling you Tom Garber, you know.
Damn, bro, why are you part of the problem, Tom?
I get that a lot too. It's just like, dude, like, what do you want me to? It's like, why? Like, this is ridiculous. It's so stupid. It's like, bro, I didn't do it. I'm just telling you about it.
I'm literally the messenger, bro.
But dude, it's case by case basis kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like, this kind of happened with Aaron Long as well, and like that was different because he wasn't a free agent. He didn't have like complete total free choice. But like, there's this like Venn diagram of you're too valuable to an MLS team and not valuable enough to a European team. Like in Aaron Long's case, the Red Bulls were quoting teams at like a $12 million transfer fee because he was the best defender in the league. But he was also 27 years old and somebody who only played in MLS. Like, nobody in France, Germany is paying that for an unproven 27-year-old center back. But the Red Bulls are like, he's so valuable to us, we can't let him leave. And like, that's kind of the way it goes back and forth. Like, it depends on the player, it depends on position. I know we'll talk about Jesus Ferreira later, but like, FC Dallas are viewed at as one of the cheaper teams in MLS, right? Part of the reason why Jesus Ferreira hasn't left is because there are a lot of teams that are interested in Jesus Ferreira who cannot match his wages at Dallas, and not necessarily even just that they can't pay it, like $2 million, they can, but it's like, all right, if we sign him to be a squad player, a rotation guy, or somebody who's competing for minutes, and we match his contract, 18 other players are coming into our office and asking for a new contract. Right. So it's not just like that they can't afford it, it's that it'll kind of break the wage bill. And Jesus Ferreira is worth that to FC Dallas. He's not worth that to Sevilla or, you know, insert any other Spanish or Italian or German team.
Yeah, but he seems to be worth it for a Russian team. Right. Because that you reported that today.
Have you thought about oligarchs?
So Spartak Moscow apparently made an offer for Jesus Ferreira, and you had reported that it was $13 million. It was swiftly rejected by Major League Soccer. And
wasn't so swift.
Okay, interesting. Okay, right. And that wasn't so Taylor Swift, am I right? Hey. So it's interesting. It's interesting that you even say that, because a lot of the initial reactions are like, how could any MLS team reject, or even the league reject, that kind of a money for a Major League Soccer player? And then you start to think about it a little bit more and unpack it, and you're like, all right, well, it's a Russian team. We know about the sanctions going on. Maybe MLS didn't want to be involved with a Russian team. Maybe they couldn't even legally work with a Russian team. I do not know. But this is what I love about Tom. Tom does the reporting. He just puts the tweet out. No opinions. Hey, close my laptop.
Shuts the laptop. Says, you know what? Let the Ethernet handle this.
Have fun all day on your social media platforms, folks. But when you saw this news and did this reporting, what were your initial thoughts just about that kind of an offer and the fact that it came from a Russian club?
The first thing that came up, like, when I was talking about it, I was like, oh my God, like, are you serious? Like, yeah, like, it's like, you know, this is real. Like, this is everything. So, like, the process had been going on for a little bit. because, like you said, the legalities of it, like, again, this is difficult for somebody of my lack of intellect to try to, like, I do transfer news, man. I don't do geopolitical, you know, is Russia allowed in the global banking system? Like, I don't know these things, right? Like, so just do not, like, and I'm trying to be super careful with the wording because it's obviously really, really sensitive. But, like, that's all part of it. And so there was, like, lawyers looking in, all right, like, is Spartak Moscow on the blacklist of, like, government, like, you can't do business with this Russian business, right? Like, it's like, no, but it's like, are the owners or the people or the sponsors who the people own the sponsorships, like, all this. Like, there's a lot of different stuff. I guess the bottom line is that this isn't the first time that MLS has stepped in and said, like, we're not moving forward with this because we can't do, like, last winter of 22, Lokomotiv Moscow had a bid for Christian Castros for the Red Bulls for $5 million, and the Red Bulls were open to it. Castros was open to it, and the league was like, we can't do business, whatever, with this Russian team, and the geopolitical, the ramifications of all of this. So, like, this has happened before, and then Castros left for a deal that might be worth up to $1 million. So the Red Bulls itself, like, lost out on a few million dollars. Dallas will lose out on money. There is not another $13 million bid coming. Spartak Moscow knows that they have to pay a premium to get players to come because of everything that's going on, right? Like, so there was a lot of moving parts. I will say that, like, I've talked to people who are sympathetic, even that, like, wanted the deal to go through, to be like, look, like, it sucks, but we get it. Like, you know, I understand being in MLS's position and, you know, what can happen to businesses, like, just governmentally, like, coming down on the league or whatever. Yeah. And who knows if, again, God forbid something comes out that an owner or a sponsor of this club has direct ties to some bad stuff, and then, like, $13 million ain't worth that kind of thing, right? And everything else. But, yeah, it's a really complicated one. It was a really weird one, and I did not love Google searching, is there a blacklist Russian company stuff? I got it on my company laptop, too. New York Times, man. I know you own my laptop because you own The Athletic, but, like, give me a break. I'm doing my work.
Jeez, bro, I'm trying to get signed by Kremlin FC, dog.
I did send a few texts and said, you know, if you tell my story if I go missing, whether it's MLS or not. I mean,
yeah, it's weird the how upset it makes people. I mean,
I also don't think the Russian Premier League is that much of a step up from 100%. Certainly not for even the exposure of the player.
I think it's really what makes the difference and what makes people talk about it is the outstanding fee that they were willing to pay.
But some are also reacting as if Vladimir Putin was trying to buy Jesus Ferreira.
Yeah. My mentions were a nightmare.
Yeah, he arrived shirtless on a horse.
Yeah. How could you not do business with the guy?
To pick Jesus Ferreira up and...
Tom, hold on. I want to know, Tom, is there one move that shocked you? Because we talked about the moves that shocked us. I mean, you probably know all this stuff as its early stages. Is there one that completely caught you by like, you know, the wayside?
As far as incomings, I was pleasantly surprised that the Red Bulls signed Emil Forsberg, because I think over the last 4 years, they've signed like one player over 25 years old, and that was Corey Burke, and he didn't play very much. 2 years ago, they had exactly one player over the age of 25 start a game. Like, so it was just like, oh, cool. Like, they're not running this like a U23 team anymore. So, like, that was, like, pleasantly surprising. But again, it was a Red Bull to Red Bull move, so it shouldn't be too shocking. Cade Kyle having to get Mexican citizenship to go to be the first active U.S. national team player to play for Chivas, I think that would go up as the biggest surprise.
That's crazy. Yeah, because I thought only Mexican national team players could play for Chivas.
Yeah, go for it.
They used to have, it was super strict. It was, you had to, like, if you had dual citizenship or dual nationality, you had to renounce that. Not, like, renounce your passport, but, like, Cade Cowell would have to file a one-time switch away from the United States to Mexico, whether or not Mexico wanted to call him up or not. You know, 7 years ago, that's what he would have had to do to make this move happen. Now they've relaxed it a little bit. They have, I think, it's a Mexican Peruvian player who plays with the Peru national team. I'm forgetting his name, but he's in the team. So Cade Cowell isn't going to be the first foreign national team player to be playing for Chivas, but he is the first U.S. national team player. And he is somebody who said on the record a year ago, I don't really have a connection to Mexico. And he told me last night in an interview when I asked him, how's your Spanish? And he was like, pretty much at ground zero, bro. He's like, but I got Duolingo and a Spanish teacher. So, like, he's taking this head on. I love it. But, like, it's not just that he's in, like, U.S. national team. Like, Ricardo Pepi was going back and forth from Mexico to the United States his whole childhood. Cade Cowell was not.
Yeah, yeah. Chivas, they change the rules a little bit. They're just like, can you roll your R's? all right, you're in.
Hey, Kate, when you think of Greg Berhalter, no bueno. I'm like, yo, hey, you're
right,
dude.
Sign the contract.
Yeah.
So this was one of the questions from Gully Squad, patreon.com. Shout out to Gully Squad. MJ Lee asked, how does Tom think the recent MLS transfers to Liga MX will work out? She's a Quake season ticket holder. She fears for Cade Cowell. And she also asked a question, which you sort of answered already. She said, also, is Cade Mexican enough? jokingly. So I guess that is a factor. I mean, I guess we can coincide it with the news of Chicharito announcing that he is going to be returning to Chivas.
That's how bad he wanted to play with Cade.
I mean, right. He really wanted to link up with Cade. But Cade Cowell is, to me, a player who has always kind of, I don't know, I don't want to be too harsh, but like underperformed. He's like, the expectations are always a little bit higher, and he's like, we've seen the highlights, and he has those moments, and he clearly is like athletically gifted and can humiliate some defenders from time to time, but there's just like that figuring it out of just like that finding that consistency. Maybe he'll get it at Chivas, but what do you think, how do you think he'll do out there, especially after speaking to him?
I hope so, man. He's an easy kid to root for, right? Like, and I agree with you. I've been harsh on him. Like, I was really hoping to see him take the leap this year, 2023 rather, and he didn't. Like, he had, I think, a goal and three assists as a full-time starter for the Quakes in like 25 appearances, right? Like, that final ball that we were hoping was going to come just hasn't come yet. But again, like, taking a step back, it's not just that he's an elite athleticism in MLS. Like, his athleticism, like, his metrics are elite around the world. Like, that's why he's had interest from a bunch of teams. That's why, you know, Bologna tried to sign him in the summer. And I think the Quakes should have done that deal. And he wanted it to happen. He was ready to go. And he's still, like, he was ready to go to Chivas, and he's happy about it. Quakes ended up getting a better deal. I'm a little bit worried just in the sense that, like, Chivas and some of these big, big super clubs in Mexico and obviously elsewhere around the world is, like, it's good and bad with the fan base, right? It's good when things are going good. I can't imagine how difficult it is when things are going bad. And Cade even kind of said that, like, yeah, like, when things are going great, like, you're their Cristiano Ronaldo. And when things are going bad, they want to throw rocks at you. And I don't know if he was being figurative or literal, because I think he was being literal. Like, and again, like, that's just for any normal player. Cade Cowell also has the "you're the first active U.S. national team member," "are you Mexican enough?" All this other crap that's going to come with the move. Yeah. His debut, which was just about the hardest debut that you can think of. It was pouring rain. He comes on the road at Tigres. They're down 1-0. Sink or swim, kid. You've had two training sessions. Good luck. Go save the day. And he embraced it. He played well. They didn't change the result, but he started to win a few people over. So, again, I'm really rooting like hell for him. I'm going to be optimistic, and I'm going to say I hope that he develops his final pass. I hope that they let him play through some mistakes if they come and let him get his feet under him. But if they do that, like, I think he'll be good. But, again, this has the potential to kind of go downhill fast.
Did you see not the game, not obviously not the game he played, but, like, when he went to the stadium?
Oh, yeah.
In the cowboy boots?
In the cowboy boots. And the
cowboy cave, baby.
That was an interesting interesting look, because we know he has blonde hair. He has kind of long hair, but he slicked it back.
Right. Oh, it was perfect.
He looked like he was on a TV novela.
My man. It was perfect.
He was like, I'm going to connect with my people. All right?
What's up, my vaqueros?
I love it. Let's move on. The other – oh, also, Brendan Vasquez scoring a great goal. For Rayados, he looks like he's gonna be settling in quite nicely. I think he's gonna do fine. But just even the we've seen a couple moves throughout the few years of you know, MLS players going to Liga MX. But this time around, it feels a little bit different, given the leagues are like in very different places from where they were in the past. They're working collaboratively a lot more, obviously, with League Cup. But there's a little bit of a feeling, we've seen comments from Liga MX, like, coaches and executives, where now they're talking about MLS, like, this is the behemoth that we have trouble competing with. So players going to Liga MX, we know that it has the history. And in general, I would say the quality is probably just slightly higher than MLS still for, like, the bigger clubs.
Exactly.
But is it the right move right now to be going to Liga MX if you're a high profile player in Major League Soccer?
Yeah, so what I will say is as you alluded to, particularly those top three or four teams, the money, the quality, the atmosphere, all that stuff, like those are the giants that MLS teams are chasing. I do think that the median MLS team is better than the median League MX team, and I think that the worst MLS team, or maybe not the worst, I don't want to be out here stumping for some of these really bad teams, and I don't really want to watch the worst MLS team by the worst League MX team. But you know what I mean, right?
Like, that's what you're saying. I think that's what you're saying.
So again, like Tigres.
In a game of dice.
Tigres, Monterrey, Club America, and Chivas even probably, even though that they've been a little bit down recently. Like those teams are giants, right? Like look at this Monterrey team that Brandon Vazquez is coming into. Like Victor Jansen was a Dutch international, played for Tottenham. He didn't really cut it in at Rayados. Sergio Canales, I didn't see, like 29. They signed him for like $10 million. Tecatito Corona was on the bench for them yesterday. Like, they have just so much talent that, like, yeah, he better score or he's going to the bench, man. Like, right. So it's very cool. I love that he took that challenge on. I will tell you that this is a very lucrative move for Brandon Vazquez, so I'm very happy for Brandon Vazquez. The offers in Europe, the only one that was on the table this winter was Middlesbrough. And first of all, their transfer offer was a few million less than Monterrey. So who knows if they would have even gotten there in terms of Cincy to say yes. But I feel extremely confident in saying Middlesbrough would not have touched what Monterrey gave Vazquez in terms of a contract. So again, like this might be a central theme. Maybe I'm too much of a player apologist here, but like, get your money, bro. I ain't blaming you for that. And Monterrey is a huge team in this hemisphere. Like, there is an argument to be made. Like, if Middlesbrough don't get promoted, or if they're not in, like, if they end up like slipping down the table or be mid table in the championship, dude, I'd rather play at Rayados.
Dude, I'm the same way. Look, you never know when your knee's gonna blow out, so go get your money while you can. When it comes to the status of MLS, there's something about this transfer window that feels a little different. Players coming in, but also big names leaving to go to places that you typically wouldn't expect. Where do you think, and I'm sure you get these questions all the time, but what do you think this says for like the state of the league and where the league is and where it hopes to be?
Yeah, I think that these things come in cycles, right? Like, what was it 2 years ago was the Ricardo Pepi offseason, and he was one of like three or four super high profile transfers that happened. Like Tati Castellanos was on loan, and then he obviously left in a $15 million transfer. So I just, and John Duran, like, he was here for a year, $18 million to Aston Villa. Jesus, I'm talking so much about Liga MX. Aston Villa. Also, I'm just trying to fit in like Kate.
John Moran. I'm like, what the hell?
Bro, is your brain okay? How you doing, Tom? Are you all right?
I was like, bro, when was he in the league? Clearly a striker. Anyway. It's a stupid joke, everyone.
I liked it. But yeah, so I think that just has to do more with the cycles right now, that there weren't like Cade Cowell might have been one of the bigger names. Like, this would all look different if somebody came in with a $30 million bid for Thiago Almada, because then that's the headliner. And I think that we'll see something like that in the summer. But it speaks, I think, less to like a lack of talent or a lack of stature with MLS, and more to like, all right, like there were a couple really, really good windows in the past few years, and like now the talent is kind of at a different stage in every personal player's career. Like, again, Caleb Wiley's another name I could say. If he pushed right now and said, I want to leave Atlanta, there'd be four or five teams lining up to pay $5 to $8 million, right? Noel Buck. Name any English team and they're at least like, yeah, we would be interested, right? Like, so there's just some guys who aren't at the right time of their cycle to be transferred. And I think that's kind of more of the story this winter than anything like in terms of like a macro indictment or a macro like worry for the league.
All right. The other thing I want to make sure we get to, I have a couple other questions from our Patreon, but the referee strike, you reported on this with Pablo Mauro recently, a potential referee strike. We have until, it's currently January 25th. They gave the deadline to January 31st. If they don't have an agreement in place, they will strike. We could have replacement refs.
Oh, boy.
Possibly. But I didn't get a chance to read the article, so apologies. But
thank you for admitting that. I wasn't going to put you under the microscope, but you admitted it anyway.
I usually do a lot more due diligence, but can you talk a little bit about the scope of this issue? I mean, we've become good friends with Christina Uncle, obviously, at CBS, Alexis's coworker. So I think over time, the last couple years, I've grown.
You've warmed up to the...
Warmed up. I'm like, hey, maybe these refs ain't so bad. Yeah. So change my mind, Tom. Why should I be upset with the referees?
No, I mean, Yeah, this is another complicated one, and another one where I don't blame it that they've been, from what we've heard about the negotiations, is they were nowhere close on both sides, and they hadn't been for a while. You know, things got a little bit closer, and the original CBA was due to expire on the 15th, and they agreed that, like, two-week or 16-day kind of extension. And part of that agreement was they spoke with the members of their union, and part of it was, will you authorize kind of extending this? And also, will you authorize a strike? That vote came back unanimous. And we've been told since the first day we've been reporting on this that the referees union has had, like, a strike fund ready. And it's been described to us as sizable, and that could last a little bit. And that the refs are ready to dig their heels in and fight on this contract. The last one, I think, was 4 years ago or something like that. And they've gotten close to striking before. They've gotten close to opening day without a deal. And some more cynical people around the league that I've spoke with, like one source was like, I was like, yeah, don't you think there's a big deal or something? I was like, what is today's date? I'm like, I don't know, January 20th. It's like, when's the first game of the season? February 21st. All right, dude, call me on February 18th, and then I'll tell you if I'm worried. So so maybe there's a scenario where they strike for a few weeks, and then hopefully they get a deal done. Like, best case scenario for all parties.
Guess what club that guy manages?
There'd be too many options. But yeah, so like they don't like the strike would impact the rest of preseason as well, and like the lower league referees are all under this umbrella. So what we've been told, and I guess we don't know this with 1,000% certainty because they would have to go out and make these deals and get the replacement refs, but the replacement refs would be from abroad, whether it's Europe, Central America, South America, whatever, and these refs that aren't trained in MLS rules and aren't trained, like some refs that aren't trained in VAR or don't have VAR in their home leagues, like this has the potential to go pretty awry. And what I'm, again, I get it. People hate refs. Everybody hates refs. It's the easiest thing. Every fan base of every team in soccer, in every league in soccer, of every fan base of every team in traditional American sports, NFL, NBA, these refs suck. We get screwed. It's crap. They're so bad. They need better refs. Everybody says that. Like, remember when the NFL had replacement refs? People forget so quickly how big of an issue that was. So like I've seen so many people replying to like the news that we broke of like, oh thank God, like the replacement refs can't be any worse. It's like, yeah, but by the literal nature of their name, yes they can.
Yeah.
They would just call them refs if there was no issue.
Right.
They'd be in the union striking.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a...
Are we going to see, like, Roombas with, like, you know, mannequins on them?
I think the way MLS should lean into this is celebrity refs. You got the Cooligans running the lines, and who cares if the first... cross the picket fence, which I know you wouldn't do. So,
we're pro union here.
Yeah, we are.
Me too.
But we're also pro content, so this could be a difficult
thing. that's the thing. I think that's how MLS could win the narrative if they start getting, or like Alexi Lalas is the center ref. Like I think a lot of people would come up and watch that.
Oh, dude, there'd be too much garbage thrown on the pitch. They could feel too much.
Alexi would be kicking people too.
Yeah, you thought they were booing the ref before.
Okay, just constant shut up Alexi signs in the crowd. Like,
why is this ref?
I bet he would love
that. Acoustic guitar.
So, dude, look. I don't know. I don't know exactly what the referees are asking for. I did see a sign. There was some I believe it was the friendly Inter Miami against FC Dallas, and I think the ref.
Oh yeah.
I don't know if it was a union or something. I forgot the exact account, but they posted a photo of the thermostat in the referee locker room, and it was like almost freezing. It was like 45
degrees. It's like
40 degrees in the locker room, and people were like, this is kind of what we're fighting for like essentially better conditions. So I'm like, all right, can we just turn up the heat?
We can turn the heat on.
I mean, I feel like they're not asking for that much.
I don't think we got a strike over this, guys.
Is someone anti-turning up the heat for the locker room?
You know, you've met MLS guys, right? They're like, I think they want us to make it colder. If I know my audience. And you're like, no, they're specifically asking for it to be warmer.
The other thing...
But if we make it colder, they won't think 45 is that cold.
If you give them an inch, they want a mile. Yeah. Okay. On a more serious note, I don't know if you had reported on this, but I saw that you had tweeted about the sport in Kansas City and the hiring of Gavin Wilkinson. I think this was obviously he is no longer with the club. Fans were very, very upset. A lot of people were frustrated about the hiring.
It seemed like it became like a landslide of negative feedback.
Yes. So look, good on them for listening to that feedback, because I think a lot of people, especially fans and season ticket holders, were very, very upset. I think it could have affected the club very, very, financially in a very, very bad way. But I'm more interested in like kind of what's happening now, because a lot of the conversations are about like why was he hired in the first place, and there seems to be a bit of a kind of people are either tight-lipped or a blame game or whatever. So as far as what you have heard about why all this happened, what can you say?
Yeah, I will say first and foremost that it's cool to me when fans kind of come together and can affect change. Like, that's awesome that the club listened to it. Like, the Galaxy, they were pretty publicly kind of against their fans during their protests last year, so it was cool. Again, and like, I get that people in these positions will say, well, like, now they're just, anytime that they don't like a signing or they want a signing, like, they're just going to do this. But like, I disagree. These are adults. Like, I think good on them and good on the club for listening, to be fair. In terms of how they got there, they used a consultancy firm. And according to my colleague, Jeff Reuter of The Athletic, reported that Wilkinson was not one of the recommendations from the consultancy firm, but he was part of the process. People at the club told me that they did their due diligence. They didn't explain exactly what that meant. I'm certain that they would have talked to people from Portland. I know that people in Portland still has relationships with Gavin Wilkinson. I'm sure that they said positive things. And I guess the club hoped that, you know, they knew it wasn't going to be an awesome reception to start with, right? But they were like, all right, we'll put him out for the press conference. He'll get grilled. We'll set up a town hall so the fans can talk to him. So I guess that their assumption was, yeah, it's not going to be awesome, but we'll see how it goes. Or like, hey, like maybe he can win them over, or maybe they'll get their voices heard and all this. But it was pretty clear within a week that the club had to change course and made that change. And now, again, they still need to hire somebody in the front office now that Gavin Wilkinson has gone too. Again, the absolute most minor part of the story, but I'd expect them to do that at some point.
Does it say anything to, you know, when he got hired, obviously with all the, I mean, I'm putting it lightly, but baggage that he came with, does it say something to sort of the state of what front offices look like in Major League Soccer, that maybe there aren't that many people that have the kind of experience that he has, that where they felt like we gotta hire him?
He's still the best option. He's still the best option.
Like, it kind of begs the question: Are there not enough people getting opportunities in Major League Soccer so that someone like that is not even really a candidate anymore, or somebody with less sort of baggage can apply and get a real opportunity? It's just so strange that was the approach of like, I don't think they're gonna be that upset.
They'll be a little upset.
So with that, I guess I'll just speak to kind of like the resume that Gavin Wilkinson had. So so again, you say you called it lightly, the baggage and stuff. Just talking about on the field stuff and his resume from Portland. He was there forever. Like, Portland were one of the early super successful expansion clubs. He brought Diego Valeri. He brought Diego Chara. They won MLS Cup in 15. They went to another two MLS Cups. He hired Caleb Porter out when he was coaching Akron. That we haven't seen many college coaches go to MLS in, you know, the last decade, really. I can't even think off the top of my head one. He then hired Gio Savarese, who led the team to a bunch of success, got to two MLS Cup finals, won the MLS's back tournament. That was a manager from the lower leagues in MLS, from the lower leagues to MLS. And that's not something that has really been replicated elsewhere. So, like, for everything that comes with it, like, it's inarguable that he was good at his job, right? And again, that doesn't excuse anything. Like, I really hope that I'm not sounding overly sympathetic, but I'm just saying in terms of, like, that's why he was almost getting another chance, because he had a proven track record of being good at this job.
Yeah, yeah. We're all kind of just trying to make sense of, like,
right,
Sporting Kansas City's decision, and clearly that was a factor for sure. All right, a couple quick questions, and before we wrap up, Jenna Broom, she's a St. Louis City fan. She asked the question, does Tom think that St. Louis has a good or even better of a shot at the playoffs this year, or was 2023 a fluke?
I think that they should still comfortably be a playoff team. It's unfair to expect any team, really, to outside of Inter Miami now, to top the conference. Like, we hear stuff about St. Louis overachieving last year, which to a degree is correct. And, like, again, don't expect everything to shake out that way. But I don't want to, like, hang them for overachieving last year. Like, it was an insane year. Who cares what the expected goals said? Like, who cares right. that Roman Berkey played out of his mind? Like, we should be celebrating that. But, like, in the same breath, don't be disappointed if they finish in fifth. Like, that's not a failure. Like, the bar should be making the playoffs again and establishing themselves.
And win a playoff game against your rival. When
you yeah, and maybe don't get blown out at home by your rival yeah. in the first.
Like. Especially when Alexis said you were going to win the whole thing on TV, damn it.
Okay, people have receipts, bro.
Yo. Nico Giochini getting sold also was my shock move of the summer, by the way.
To Como, which as soon as I saw that, you mentioned about getting the bag and players getting the bag, I'm like, okay, he's getting paid. There's no to go to a Serie B team and leave a very successful MLS club. Clearly, the plan, obviously, for Como, they're I believe they're in second, and so they should be getting,
trying to tool up now.
Yeah, and yep. get get the roster ready now. But kind of disappointing to lose a really good player, a solid player for St. Louis, and then the
American International formerly.
Yeah, two, and then they go to a Serie B team, even though he's who's the coach?
Seth Fabregas.
I thought it was obviously.
Okay, so we'll see. All right, the a couple other ones.
There's our Como expertise.
Como, yeah. they were great at the TST.
I know that's where my mind keeps going.
they had supporters, right? I think Como had like a whole.
And they had an active player playing. They Patrick Cutrone, who played in the Premier League. He's like 28. He was playing in the tournament.
Amazing.
All the like retired MLS players and like college players were like, "Why the hell are you playing?"
This is from Robin Tagini. She asked, "Do you have any opinions on Atlanta United signings?" And also, This must be some history on Twitter. She says, you never answered my question about that vodka penne pizza that you posted a pic of last year. Was that from Anthony's on Belmar Boulevard in Wall?
Correct.
Oh, it was. Okay.
It was.
Glad we got down to the bottom of that.
Robin,
I just want to point out how amazing our fan base is.
They're like, it's like very specific questions that.
Well, I hope now she goes to that pizzeria.
Amazing. And opinions on Atlanta's new signing. I mean, I know Dax went there, but I'm not familiar with who else they signed.
Bartosz Schlisch, Stian Gregersen, and they made John De Silva's loan permanent. I love what they've done this offseason. I love what they did in the summer. The last two or three windows have been honestly near perfect. And the only reason why it's near is because we can't give a full grade until they inevitably sell Thiago Almada and we see who their replacement is. And based on Garth Lagerwey, he's legitimately one of the two, I think, best general managers, sporting directors in MLS history. Based on his track record and everything else, and plus what he's helped do in Atlanta since he got there, they get the benefit of the doubt for me. Like, they've done so much well. And right, like maybe Gregersen, maybe the center back isn't as good as I think he's going to be. Same thing with defensive midfield. Like maybe that happens, but sitting here right now, I think it's just been an awesome winter.
I just hope that Zande Silva doesn't have a miss like he did last season. Oof. Remember that miss? That was a bad miss, bro.
Remember the Spider-Man mask, at least.
And last question from David Meyer. He's a Union fan. He asked the question, which fan bases have been the most fun to interact with? A fun one.
It's a good question. I mean, like anything else, like there's all good and bad for every fan base. So like nobody should be, you know, criticized for like their bottom 1% or necessarily their top 1%. So I have fun with a lot of teams. I like there's some LAFC fans, Philly fans that seem to come strong in the mentions and beat. They're playful because I'm good with jokes. It's as long as you're like good. Like what I hate is when sometimes like Alexis, as you well know, the Jersey side of everything of like. Look, if the rules of engagement here are, like, it's cool if you say F you to me. I'm good with that. I usually deserve it, right?
Yeah.
But, like, when you open that up, you better get ready that you're about to get kicked yourself, too, right? Like, you know what I mean? I've had so many people.
If you
not
swing
so
at me,
many.
But you know I'm going to swing back.
Yeah. And like that's the rules of engagement. Fair enough, right? Like I've had some people be like, "Wow, like why are you being mean?" I was like, "You see what he just said to me? Give me a break."
Yeah.
He started it.
Yeah. It's my entire MO, and it's like I know I should be more professional than that, but I think it's fun to be.
We should do a power rankings of like. Most fun fan bases to interact with. Because
yeah, that's not going to cause a stir at all.
Dumb idea. Stupid idea.
The ones at the bottom will be really understanding and very nice about the whole thing. But yeah, some people have a little bit better with the banter. Mm-hmm. I would say Union fans are pretty high up there. NYCFC fans pretty high up there.
Yeah, I think they get it. They get the vibe.
They get it.
Rebel fans not as much.
A little bit more aggressive at least when it comes to us. Fans only give out, it's very subjective.
They do not like the bands.
So we have to. We know what minds to step in. You know what I mean?
Also, don't like trophies. It's very difficult. Just like a difficult.
Yeah, let's go. That's so Metro. I love the shirt, Tom.
The red Metro. That's
what you got roasted.
All right, let's wrap up there. Everybody, thank you so much. Tom, thank you so much for joining us. As always, make sure you follow at Tom Boger on all social channels. And your YouTube, please plug the YouTube. We gotta give a shout out to not only the YouTube, but the thumbnail game.
Oh, yes, this is cool. I didn't know you owned a pillow company and tried to help change the election.
My man got his hand in a lot of pots. Yeah. Bro, he does a lot. Because this thumbnail.
Tommy Lindell over here.
I was joking with you. I was saying that you look like a Pixar character. Your face looked mad smooth. You look like the dad from Incredibles.
Your eyebrows look like they should have their own YouTube channel. This is a collab.
I get the three mustaches is what the comments have been saying right. Lately.
Have Mikel Arteta's jeans with the eyebrow color.
So, but you love to see
it. How many
it.
Instagram filters are on you at the same time?
Tom.
You know we've seen you in person, right?
The YouTube is great, though. My man is coming. He's giving people the information, the knowledge that they need to a younger audience.
Right,
obviously,
right.
We know what YouTube is. So it's great to see. I mean, what's it been like doing a YouTube channel now?
It's felt uncomfortable because I feel a little weird doing it, particularly as, like, I didn't make that thumbnail, as you can guess, because I'm not that good at editing and being artistic.
Yeah. Have you thought about maybe sending a photo to the people who did the thumbnail?
This is a lovely caricature.
Yeah,
of Tom.
This looks like a guy who owns like a bakery somewhere in the middle of Spain.
I'll take that. That's better than my pillow. It's been good though. It's been different fun. People have been nice. Generally been nice, which is cool. I felt vulnerable, so that was cool.
Nice.
All right, man.
So what are you hoping to do? Are you gonna do some like behind the scenes stuff, a little vlogging, or is it all, you know, camera, face to camera explanation stuff?
More so that, but like, dude, I haven't even been a big consumer of YouTube. So not only not knowing what to do from this side, but it's not even like I have like a baseline of knowledge just from consuming YouTube. So I'm like literally like at the end of every video, it's like I read the comments. If there's something you guys want, just tell me, or like I'm not gonna know exactly what. So
well, here comes show the feet comments.
Nothing yet.
Okay, so
that's on OnlyFans.
YouTube.com/TomBoger. Go subscribe right now.
Absolutely.
I love to see it. I love to see him branching out, okay? It's not just words. He's also putting that mustache on camera.
That's right.
Tom, thank you so much for joining us. As always, make sure you follow us at SoccerCooligans on all social channels. Subscribe to the YouTube. We're almost at 10K. Let's go.
Come on.
Yeah.
We're doing it.
Now we got to beat Tom Boger.
Okay. You are a competitor now. hit the subscribe button there on YouTube and on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you listen. We appreciate it. We'll be back on Monday, another fun episode. But thank you so much for tuning in, everybody. Peace. Say bye, Tom.
See ya.
Love you guys.
Now's the time to start your next adventure behind the wheel of an exciting new Toyota hybrid. With the largest lineup of hybrid, plug-in hybrid, and electrified vehicles to choose from, Toyota has the one for you. Every new Toyota hybrid comes with Toyota Care 2-year complimentary scheduled maintenance, an exclusive hybrid battery warranty, and Toyota's legendary quality and reliability. Visit your local Toyota dealer today. Toyota, let's go places. See your local Toyota dealer for hybrid battery warranty details.